Welcome back to the program. People are often shocked by profanity, but after all, that's the point. Profanity is a kind of social punctuation that we use when we need to shock, to describe in ways that other words just may not suffice. Perhaps few profanities today are as common or more attuned to our celebrity culture than the A-word, a word that our guest, linguist Jeffrey Nunberg, ties to the sense of entitlement that permeates so much of our celebrity culture. Jeffrey Nunberg is a linguist, a professor at UC Berkeley's School of Information, is heard regularly on NPR's Fresh Air, and is the emeritus chair of the usage panel of the American Heritage Dictionary. He is the author of several previous books, and it is my pleasure to welcome him back to the program today to talk about his newest work, Ascent of the A-Word, Assholism, the First 60 Years. Jeffrey Nunberg, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me.
It's good to have you here. One of the things that one thinks about in reading the book is whether or not the word has evolved entirely to describe a certain behavior, or correspondingly, behavior has evolved in a certain way to fulfill the needs of the word.
Well, you know, I guess if I had to choose, I'd say a little more of the first than the second. People say, oh, you know, there's this pervasive incivility in American life, and they speak of the coarsening of American culture and so forth. But when you look back, either at political discourse or just ordinary behavior, although the forms of misbehavior have changed, I don't know that the overall the level of civility has declined. Certainly politicians were being accused of, with more vehemence in earlier ages, or as much vehemence as they are now. And, you know, you watch a show like Mad Men, for example, mm-hmm. and you see what people, you know, somebody sits down at a table, lights up a cigarette, ogles the breasts of some woman, tells an anti-Semitic joke, throws the pack on the floor. Now, we consider that the height of incivility. And we don't do those things anymore. But there are other things, of course, that we do that they would have found uncivil. So I don't know that the overall level of incivility changes, but certainly the quality does. And I think this word more evolved to express a different attitude about incivility and how one should respond to it.
In many ways, the whole argument about incivility is something that's still grown out of the 1960s culture wars. I mean, that's what it gets caught up in.
Yeah, certainly in its present form it does. And the word incivility itself, we think of it as an antique word, and it is. It goes back to the 17th century. But the fact is that people rarely used that word before the late 60s. And it was a word that was used in the sense that they exchanged civilities. It was a kind of formulaic politeness. It's only with the 60s and the rise of the movement and the hippies and so on that incivility suddenly becomes a big deal. It appears in editorials in the New York Times in 1969, more than it has in the previous 50 years. So incivility itself is a new way of thinking about old behavior, so to speak.
And talk about this word, the A-word, and how it has evolved in terms of its meaning since its earliest usage is kind of a World War II slang, as you talk about.
It is a World War II slang. It's used by GIs for their officious officers and other jerks in their presence. It first appears as the description of a character in a novel in Norman Mailer's Naked and the Dead, which is 1948. But it doesn't really enter the American vocabulary, the general vocabulary, until around 1970. That's when you start to see it in novels by plays by Neil Simon, in movies by Woody Allen, in Tom Wolfe essays, in movies like the Dirty Harry movies, but Animal House and Caddyshack and so on. That's when this word becomes part of our general moral life.
And as it does, it happens kind of side by side with the growth of celebrity culture and bad behavior that goes along with it.
It certainly does. It coincides with a lot of things. It coincides with a rise of celebrity culture, as you say. It coincides with a new sense of informality and authenticity. Really, I think it has to do with the reshaping of the lifestyle that emerged in the 60s. And which at the time was thought to be subversive, as all those things, jeans and long hair and drugs and swearing, lost their political significance. It just became signs of authenticity and informality. It drives out other words. It drives out heel. You know, the characters played by Zachary Scott and Dan mm-hmm. Duryea in those own movies. those old movies, are now described by the A word. It drives out the word the phony that Holden Caulfield had an obsession about. So it really takes a place at the center of our moral lives that unites and these various the traits that are going on.
In that sense, it becomes almost co-opted by the mainstream culture.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was a vulgar word. It you know, if you look in the 1950s, it's there, but it's there in noir novels and military World War II novels and so on and so forth. It's a tough guy's word. It's only in the early 70s, for example, that feminists picked the word up initially. It to replace words like heel and cad for a man who's insensitive and treats women badly, and ultimately women who are not feminists at all, it becomes the standard term for the jerk that you've discovered is running off with your girlfriend or something.
And of course, in our culture today, it covers a wide range of individuals, including the likes of, as you talk about, Donald Trump being the perhaps penultimate example.
Right, he deserves the A word. He's a pure A word in a sense in which few people are pure anything. He's and not just in every aspect of his life, in his personal life, in his political life, and in the reality show he creates, which to my mind is one of the best examples of what I think of as a spectacle of A wordism, where he every segment is structured to enable you to watch him acting like a jerk to a bunch of people who have been incited to act like jerks, to lead to the finale where he says, "You're fired." And there are few things more pleasant than watching somebody be a jerk or an A-word to other people who are A-words. That's the principle around which most of reality TV is structured, around which talk radio and a lot of cable political work television is structured. It's become the center of the spectacle of A-wordism that I speak of.
And why is that, do you think? Why is that kind of A-word behavior so attractive?
Well, I think there's several reasons. The first is that, you know, in a certain sense, you can think you can say Donald Trump is an A-word, so we don't have to be, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
He acts out a certain idea of being unpleasant and abusive to people who we think deserve the A-word themselves, that we feel on the highway or we feel in the office and so on and so forth. But unless we're protected by the relative anonymity of the highway or the internet, we feel certain inhibitions about behaving like this. Maybe we have a boss that we think deserves the label. Well, we wouldn't want to call him out on it. And I say him because the word is so often used so much more often used of men than women. But we can turn on television and watch people being unalloyed, unapologetic A-words to one another and say, well, you know, there's a pleasure, a kind of cathartic pleasure in watching them do that.
And there's a certain streak of a freedom and libertarianism that's kind of associated with that behavior, and that goes to some of the political aspects that you talk about early on in the book.
Right, and I think that when people talk about the degradation of political discourse, it is, as I say, initially kind of problematic, because then the historians say, well, yeah, but they were saying the same things about Roosevelt and Lincoln and Jefferson and so on, and that's true, often worse things. What's different is that modern political discourse has a characteristic tone that would have been unimaginable in earlier ages. So a character like Ann Coulter, for example, can make these outrageous remarks. The 9/11 widows enjoyed their husband's deaths. It's a terrible thing to say, but we know she doesn't really mean it. She doesn't care about these women. The point of making the gesture is so that the A-words on the other side, the Hillary Clintons and so on and so forth, will become indignant, and the people on her side can enjoy their indignation. They can enjoy the prospect of being outrageous to the extent of scandalizing people on the other side. And that's the dynamic that's operating in American political discourse. Now, it's very different. That's never existed before, and it's an entertainment medium. Nobody before now ever figured out how to make political abusiveness a 24/7 business model.
The problem with it is, to continue to keep it entertaining, you have to keep pushing the limits of the envelope.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. People say, well, why can't we be civil in our discourse? And then the answer is nobody would tune in. Not enough people would tune in. You wouldn't sell enough. So yes, I think absolutely you have to keep pushing the envelope, and people are pushing the envelope, whether in reality television or in the movies or political talk or just in political life. I think the recent Republican political primary campaign was the most extraordinarily A-wordistic, if I can call it that, campaign that we've ever had in American political life.
Because?
Well, because these characters, I mean, Gingrich, Kane, Trump for a while was leading in the right. in the Republican polls. No character like that has ever been able to, given particularly his background and the people he's appealing to, ever been able to achieve that that role. It isn't that people don't know that Trump is merits the A-word. On the contrary, if you look at what people, his supporters, were saying about him, he's a real A-word.
Right.
And that's exactly what we need now, because he'll take it to that other A-word who's sitting in the White House now. That's a new dynamic. And in fact, if you think about it, we have only on one occasion that I can think of in modern times have we ever elected to the presidency someone that everybody more or less agreed deserved the A-word. That was Nixon in 1968. And it was a special case because it was 68, and even then Humphrey almost won. Bush, by the time he ran in 2004, many people considered he deserved the label, but he was already incumbent, and people thought Kerry deserved the label too. But we don't generally elect people like that to public office, and yet the Republicans, a large part of the Republican base in this recent primary campaign, was prepared to choose among half a dozen people, all of whom merited the word, even in their own view.
And perhaps the similarity to this campaign that you're talking about, the primary campaign this year, and even Nixon in 1968, is that they both took advantage of a huge amount of anger that was out there in the general public now and then.
Yes, exactly. It's a really nice point, because what was happening in 68, as I say, that's when the word incivility comes in. That's when people suddenly start yelling about these uncivil, dirty, unkempt, long-haired, foul-mouthed hippies and demonstrators, and it's anger at them, which really foreshadows the structure of political discourse now that creates the desire to put into office a figure like Nixon, who merits the award. Now, I think Nixon, in retrospect, is heads and shoulders above the crop that were most of the crop that were presenting themselves to the presidency in this last campaign, but that certainly has a lot to do with it. I don't think Nixon could have been elected 4 years earlier.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the A-word in relationship to other profanity. Does it stand out in some way? Is it different in some way?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know if it's exceptional, but it's certainly different. We tend not to think of these words as having a meaning at all. And that's what makes them so fascinating to a linguist, because they're not words we reflect on, like incivility and so on, that we pontificate on, that we write op-eds about, and so they're truer reflections of our feelings than other words are. We tend to think of them, as I say, as just the explosions of emotional steam that really don't have any meaning at all, and even dictionaries define these words, well, just someone who's contemptible. In fact, if you think about the A-word, it's a very specific meaning. You can merit the label for cheating on your wife, but not for cheating on your income tax. You can merit the label for stealing colleagues' ideas, but probably not for plagiarizing from a book. If you think George W. Bush merited the label, many people did, it wasn't because you think he lied about the WMDs. It's because he had that kind of smirking attitude toward the press. So it's a very specific category, very specific moral judgments that's different from calling somebody with a P word or the F word or other words of vulgar words of that variety.
It has also become intertwined in success and management. I mean, even people, everybody from George Patton to Steve Jobs.
Yes, yes. And we've made, in the same sense in which we've made heroes, or at least celebrities, out of people who exemplify that trait. And certainly Trump is the primary example, because there's no reason why Trump would be of any interest to people if he didn't merit the A-word. He would be no more famous than any of the 50 other people who have as much money as he does. In an age that's made heroes of people who merit the A-word, we've also made heroes of CEOs, and the crossing there is almost inevitable. So there's a sense in which these A-word CEOs like Steve Jobs or Larry Ellison or others become fascinating to us. I have no doubt Jobs was a genius and a brilliant manager and an interesting character, certainly different from most of the CEOs who merit this word, who are routine A-words, if you will. But uh, But I don't think Isaacson's biography would have been a bestseller if he'd been no more interesting than the average creative CEO.
Of course, the other part of it is the degree to which women are now ascending the corporate ladder and taking on many of these qualities, but really are described with a different word.
You know, that's interesting to me. I think, and I've said, and people look at me when I say it, that in the interest of gender equity, we should use the A word of women much more than we do. And the reason is this, that if you, for example, you and I are standing at the airport and somebody's berating the gate clerk for not giving him an upgrade, you know how much money my company spends on tickets and stuff. And you and I look at each other and we roll our eyes. We don't even have to say it. We're thinking the A word. Now, make that instead of a man, a woman, and people will think in terms of the B word. But
right.
This doesn't, why does this have to do with gender? Why should we evoke some primordial feminine malignity? She's just being an A word exactly the way the man was. And we should, in many cases, leave gender out of it. You know, people who merit the A word are A words, and that's an end of it.
But we don't. We don't give women, as you talk about, we don't give women credit for being the A word.
Right, no, absolutely. I think, as I say, a lot of, you know, when a man does something that's an abuse of his role or position or something, we say, well, what an A word. When a woman does the same thing, we say, what a B. The assumption is it has something to do with her being a woman. But you know, men and women can abuse their power and their role in exactly the same way, and there's no reason to have different words for them.
The other part of it is the way we view it so circumstantially. In other words, if we see that person behaving badly at the airport, for example, to stay with your analogy, we roll our eyes, we might be offended by it. Yet when celebrities behave the same way, we're compelled to watch it and attracted to it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're attracted to it. You got a Charlie Sheen character or Mel Gibson or something. In part, it's this antique fascination with watching people, watching the misdeeds of the high and the mighty. In part, it's just, as I say, that these people, like rock stars who do this sort of thing, are fascinating to us because they seem to think they can get away with it, and you know what? They can.
Is this word a fad? Will this word fade in terms of its power and meaning with regard to all the things we've been talking about?
Well, it's hard to know. As I say, it's tied to so many basic elements in our modern culture, from our attitudes about social class to our attitudes about gender to our attitudes about power, that it's hard to imagine it disappearing anytime soon. There are these variants. If you look in the slang dictionaries and so on, you'll see half a dozen words that we use more or less in place of it. But I think it plays a very central role for us, and to imagine it changing is to imagine profound changes in American culture. And the reason I stress that is because people think, oh, well, we have this problem with incivility. Schools need to do more. We need to have a national conversation. Let's start an institute. Let's have a conference and so on. And those approaches are really band-aids on what's a deep problem in American culture, and one that we're all implicit in. Because the fact is that while we can deplore the A word or the existence of language like that and cluck our tongues and so on and so forth, there are also categories that we need and sometimes even feel obliged to use. The example I give is your sister calls you. She says she's just discovered her husband's having an affair with a babysitter, and they're running off to the Bahamas. Now, you're not only permitted to say what an A-word, you're obliged to say what an A-word. You can't say what a cad, what a bounder. In the interest of solidarity and sympathy, you have to say what an A-word. And to that extent, we're all implicit in this notion. And it isn't simply a question of incivility. It's a question also of responding to incivility in certain ways.
And where do the moralists fit into this equation, and assuming there are some left?
Well, the moralist, if by that you mean the William Bennett types, the tongue cluckers who talk about the coarsening of American culture and the decline of civility and so on, they've got their own game. And in a certain sense, they're implicit, too, in this story. There's often, if you look at political life, for example, nothing more purely exemplary of incivility than the charges of incivility. There's a kind of disingenuousness about the way people charge other side. Well, you know, you get somebody. I wouldn't even say which side it is. Somebody on one side says about somebody on the other side, oh, did you hear so-and-so saying that they were going to toss women under the bus? Did you hear that violent rhetoric? Now, when somebody does that, there's a charge of incivility. But in fact, it's the charge itself that's uncivil. And so the moralists are just as implicit in this story as everybody else.
Is there finally a long-term consequence from the toxicity of all of this?
Well, you know, if there's a, I, at the end of the book, I'm trying to think, okay, what hope is there? In a certain sense, I don't know that, you know, as I say, this is a complicated cultural development and it has a lot of positive sides. It's an intolerance of jerks and people who abuse their power and so on that it expresses. That's a positive element of our culture. If there's any sign of hope with regard to things like political discourse, in the end, this stuff doesn't work. Now, you can think Romney, you can have your views on Romney. I do, and presumably you do. But I don't think he really merits the A word in the sense in which people like Gingrich and Kaine and Trump did.
Mm-hmm.
Those people, in the end, don't, in political discourse, do very well. And as I say, with the notable exception of Nixon, and that was a special case, we've never elected a president who deserve this label. So that kind of behavior and that kind of talk in political life, it's great if you're Fox News and you're trying to build an audience among a certain constituency and whip up a certain kind of anger and resentment. It doesn't in the end work particularly well in winning political power and in maintaining political power. And I think in the end, it's counterproductive even for the people who wield it as a strategy.
And one wonders then if the pendulum will at some point swing back in the other direction, that there'll be a kind of revulsion, maybe that's too strong, to all of this, and we'll see some kind of real reaction to it.
You know, I'd like to think that's true, and I just don't know.
Jeffrey Nunberg, the book is Ascent of the A-Word, Assholism, the First 60 Years. Jeffrey, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really great. Thank you.
Thank you.